Imagine a space for South Asian women where stories are not just told, but actually felt. This is Rue, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing, brought to you by Jyoti and Monica, two friends who set out to carve a little space and make a difference by sharing stories and fostering healing and strength within our community. We invite you to listen and reflect, finding your own path one story at a time. And just for sticking around, there's a golden biscuit at the end of each episode. Hi, and welcome to Rue. Our guest today embodies the spirit of our show, Rising Over Obstacles and Healing. Her story is about the painful but ultimately rewarding process of finding your voice and your footing after your life takes an unexpected public turn. She's going to walk us through the cultural judgment, the personal setbacks, and the hard-won clarity that comes from choosing yourself. So welcome to the show, Sandeep. So happy to have you.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's amazing what you're doing with Rue. I'm so grateful that there's a show out there like this for women like us.
Well, I'm happy that you chose to come on and share your story. I'm honored that you trusted Rue to bring your story to all the women who need to hear it. So tell us about yourself.
Sure. So my name is Sandeep Kaur. I was born in Punjab, India. I moved to New York when I was 5 years old. Probably dating myself, but this is, we're talking about 1986. So at that time, there were not a lot of Punjabis. There were, but not a lot. And whatever Punjabis we did come across, we would like, you know, stick to each other like glue, right? And try to kind of build community. And so I was raised in New York, but raised pretty close to the Punjabi culture, and I would say a fairly strict Punjabi household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all of our parents that came around that time wanted to really hold on tightly to the roots back home.
Absolutely.
So how was it like growing up?
It was great, right? Initially, it was a little tough because we had to get used to the culture here and even like starting school, learning the new language. And I know you've had multiple guests on your show that can relate, yourself included, that have gone through this journey. Mm-hmm. I remember my mom always says on the airplane, apparently, I asked for dal roti. We're not Lufthansa Airlines, but I was like, I don't want to eat what they're giving. Where is the dal and roti? But back in those days, it was nice to have such strong, I guess I'm grateful to my parents that they kept me so close to the culture, and I was still able to hold on to my identity as a Punjabi girl, because especially at 5 years old, right? Like everything was kind of being shaped for me at that time.
Exactly. Yeah. And as you were growing up with the two, I guess, cultures, did you find that you were being restricted at home as far as how you wanted to really fully express yourself?
Absolutely. There was definitely this tug of war as to how my parents wanted me to behave and be seen, right, in the public eye versus how I felt I should be allowed to live. My parents are great parents, but they did keep me in a very tight bubble, if you will.
Yeah.
Which hindsight, I think, was a disservice to me. There was a lot of things that I was very naive to, not familiar with at all, because they would constantly, like, literally, like, put me in a bubble and made sure that, you know, I didn't have any external noises coming in. So going out to the movies was, like, not a thing for me. My childhood best friend, who happens to be your sister-in-law, Remy at the time, and they lived right across the street from us. I was not even able to go to her house because my parents were just that adamant about being able to kind of, I guess, control or maneuver or over micromanage almost, right? The environment that I'm in and what's happening. Like going to school, I remember like junior high school and high school, my dad would literally be right outside of the door of my high school waiting for me. Like he would hear the bell ringing, the last period bell ring, and he would be right there at the door waiting for me to come out. And if I was even more than like 2 minutes late, he'd be like, where were you? What were you doing? And whereas like Remy used to get to take the public bus home, and I'd be like, that's not fair. Like, I'm going to go on the bus. Like, granted, yeah, MTA, but all the kids were doing it, and that's where I wanted to be, but I couldn't.
Yeah. So did your parents ever explain to you why they were as strict as they were? Or it's just the way things were, and you just had to accept them?
Yeah, I think it was just the way things were. And I couldn't really speak up against it. And again, because I think I was brought up with like all of these restrictions, I wasn't really given the confidence or the freedom to express myself. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I didn't speak up, right? And I think a lot of times now, like in my adult life, I see how that has impacted me, where I'll be afraid to speak up or defend myself. And I don't think they did it intentionally, right? They were just trying to safeguard me and make sure that I remember the roots that I have and kind of where I come back from and represent them well, which I understand, like they had good intention, but I wish they would have let me express that or given me the confidence to express myself better in multiple scenarios.
You know, what ends up happening is when you're going through adolescence and your teenage years, it's already such a challenging time. Your hormones are all over the place. But then you add in the fact that you have these cultural restrictions placed upon you, and then you're trying to express yourself, but you're not fully able to. Mm-hmm. And I came across this a lot. I remember in my high school, my parents were not as strict, but I knew some girls whose parents were very strict. And what I saw, honestly, I used to want to just have a chat with the parents because I wanted to say, like, listen, your daughters are not happy. They're having to manage like two different cultures and they feel like they don't belong to either one. And I would see these girls, they were, and I'm talking strict in the sense that they had to have their hair braided. Mm-hmm. They had to wear a suit at home.
Yep.
A suit at home.
Yep.
Salwar kameez.
My dad used to not like me wearing. So I went to private school up until seventh grade. And so we had a uniform, not an issue there, even though it was a skirt, but my skirt was always like past my knees. As a Catholic school girl, I was one of those girls that had it past my knees. I'm not going to lie and, you know, be in sales at Guri Tissue and not have rolled up my skirt a few times once I got to like sixth, seventh grade to try to fit in. And then once I moved over to public school, I had to, you know, get normal clothes. And like my dad would always make me wear like baggy t-shirts. Mm-hmm. At this time, when I was in high school, is when like the whole trend of bodysuits came out. I remember it was like this huge thing, like burgundy color and like olive green colors, like those earthy tones.
Yeah.
With like the boss jeans and stuff. And all the girls would wear the bodysuits with like the baggy jeans. Girl, I was not allowed to, but I don't know how I got my hands on one pair. And I would put it on, put a t-shirt on. Go to school and take my t-shirt off. And this is, you know, this is the kind of stuff I had to do. But yes, I would come home and the expectation was either I was like in my brother's like baggy oversized clothes.
Yeah.
Or I had to be in a salwar kameez. Like on the weekends, you never saw me in street clothes. I was always in like a salwar kameez.
Yeah. So I didn't know that that was the case with a lot of girls. I mean, I knew it was for the girls I knew growing up on the West Coast. And they did the same thing. They would, at school, they were not recognizable at all. And then, you know, they would put themselves back together going back home. And they would just look like a totally different person. And I felt bad seeing that because it was just, you know, like I felt like this is a part of them. Like this is how they want to express themselves. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with like you wanting to dress the way you want to dress, right? But then when we start putting restrictions, it's almost like everything becomes sexual when it shouldn't.
Right?
Because that's why, like, that's why parents don't want you wearing fitted clothes. That's why, because they're thinking everyone's looking at you that way.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at all the statistics and everything, what you wear has nothing to do with it. Sadly, that's how I think our parents felt back in the day.
At the time.
I have seen some change, and I'm hoping that parents are changing and they are letting their kids express themselves the way they want to. So aside from the clothing restrictions, did you have any other restrictions where you felt like weren't fitting in because of some things that you weren't allowed to do?
Yes, I think you were mentioning it, like having your hair braided. Like I wasn't allowed to cut my hair. So I used to have a long lambigot that went like all the way down almost to my knees. And then once I got to high school, I would like try to wrap it up in a bun, but I would have like this huge, massive, like thick hair, messy bun sitting on my head. I wasn't allowed to do my eyebrows. And this is probably going to be TMI, but like just to ensure that I don't show my legs, my parents wouldn't even allow me to shave my legs. Like that was a whole thing. And I used to be so embarrassed. And I'd be the one girl always in pants, no matter how warm it was. And I remember in high school, I would actually like look at the girls in shorts and like, I would daydream of the day that I get to wear shorts. Like, this is so sad.
Yeah.
This was like a goal of mine, right? Where I get to like expose my legs. And I think funny enough, like some of these restrictions, and this probably links to my story, but like, it was almost like all of these things were off limit until I got married. Right?
Yes.
Like these are the things you cannot do, but when you get married, you're going to be able to do these things.
Yeah.
And so for me, marriage was also this symbol of like, okay,
freedom.
I'm finally freedom and like I get to grow up. But I do want to highlight that during this time, I think one of the things that used to really get me upset is that it made me feel like my parents didn't trust me. Right. And I was a very good kid. Like I would never be disrespectful to my parents. Like if my parents told me jump, I was the kid that would say how high. Like I would never question it. And so it was very disappointing that they didn't trust me enough to say like, OK, we'll let you go to the movies and we know you won't do anything stupid.
Yeah.
And that used to make me so angry inside. Like I'm not doing anything bad. I just want to be a kid. I just want to go hang out with my friends. I want to. You know, St. Gregory's Carnival, which is like a big carnival we used to have in Belrose Flora Park area. And all of my friends, my brother, everyone from the neighborhood used to get to go and I couldn't go.
Your brother could go, but you couldn't go.
I couldn't go. And my brother would go with like Remy Raj, that whole gang.
Yeah.
Everybody. I remember one year in particular, they all came over to the house to like pick up me and my brother. And my dad was like, yeah, Preet can go. Sandeep has to stay home. And I cried so much that night. And I was just like, how unfair is life that I don't get to go? And they all get to enjoy it. And I'm sure, you know, I don't remember now, but it definitely created some sort of like resentful feelings and emotions.
Yeah.
And maybe not even just towards my parents, but like my brother and my friends that they get to do this thing. Misplaced, but you know, that they get to do this and I don't.
And to the culture to some extent, because it's in the name of this culture, the values and everything that you're not being able to do this. So you kind of start to resent where you come from, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Thinking back, I feel like my emotions towards being a Punjabi were always like on the fence, right? Because like I love Punjabi music. I love Bhangra. I love like, you know, how we dress and the food and everything. But then stuff like this would happen and it would get me angry. And it would be in moments like this that I'd be like, why was I born a Desi? Or why was I born into the Punjabi culture? Like if I was Hispanic or some other culture, I would get to live my life.
Yeah.
Right. So then sometimes secretly I would wish that I was something else.
I can't imagine having your friends, your own brother go to these carnivals and then you're at home. How did your parents justify it?
There was never any justification because it was just,
like,
and that's it. And they knew that I wasn't going to test them. I wasn't that girl, at least not at that point in time. I wasn't that person to kind of poke to see how far I could get. It was like, okay, I was told a no. All right, it's a no.
Yeah.
And I would just shut down.
How did you console yourself? Did you turn to anything?
So this is going to be probably really cheesy.
It's okay.
But I remember I would just like go and sit in my room and obviously first cry it out. my childhood bedroom had like this window that faced the backyard, and you could always see the stars and like the moons from that the moon from that window. And so I would literally just sit there and daydream like what that future life is going to look like for me, where I get to be free and I get to be myself. And that was kind of like the hope I would cling on to, that, okay, it's fine. I don't get to do all these things now, but one day I'm going to get to live my life. And I would kind of like literally talk to the sky and like, you know, people talk about manifesting. I think like as a little girl, I was trying to manifest and I didn't even know that I was manifesting.
Because you're envisioning what that future would look like, where you would be able to make your own decisions, go places you want to go, wear what you want to wear, eat what you want to eat.
Exactly.
So when did things start to change for you?
So I'd say like around when I got to college, I got a little bit of freedom. I was given a car to commute back and forth. My dad always used to have my class schedule on the fridge. He always had a copy, so he knew like what time my classes would get out. And every time I would like create my schedule, I was never allowed to have like a super large gap or sign up for like evening classes.
Oh, so they had to be sort of
in the middle of like, the day. Yeah. And I needed to be like done and like be home by like a decent time. But in that, I started, I guess, trying to live my life a little bit, right? I have my car, so I would keep like a change of clothes and stuff like that in the trunk. I would like give myself maybe like an hour break or whatever, and I would get to hang out at like the student center or like in the cafeteria. Not that I had much of a social life. I think I was still very like shy and introverted. And again, the confidence was just never there because my parents kind of like shot down any hopes of that, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't very like social kid that I would like go up to other people and chat it up. So if I got lucky and I made friends in class, that was great. But I would say throughout college, I kind of pretty much kept to myself. It was just more like I'm out and about, right?
Yeah.
A side note, funny enough, for senior cut day in high school, I actually took myself to the movies.
Really?
And that was my first time ever in a movie theater.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
That was like my treat. Meanwhile, all of the other kids are like at the mall, hanging out, doing all sorts of like crazy stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to just go to the movie theater and see what that looks like.
I hope it was memorable for you.
I actually don't remember what movie I watched, but...
Well, just that feeling of at least just going.
Absolutely. But yeah, so in that process and being in college, I think the idea of boys maybe kind of, right?
Yeah. Well, it's came, that age too.
Yes. Yeah. And was at not my forefront, but you know, it was there on the horizon. And so I think it was around that time that I somehow ended up starting to talk to this guy. And the reason why I met this guy was because of one of my friend's friends was like interested in him. And I don't know if you remember, but like back in the days, you would like talk on AOL or AIM,
yes,
right?
Yes, I remember those days.
Yes. Yeah, so weirdly enough, I was able to pull that off and I had one of those accounts, but I had to be very sneaky about getting on because if my dad found out, he would murder me. Mm-hmm. So she wanted me to like reach out to him and like talk to him on her behalf, which I guess like behind the screen, I was pretty bold and maybe stepping into who I wanted to be. Yeah. And so I started talking to him and for whatever reason, like, he ended up gravitating towards me. Okay. And so we would have, you know, here I am, a girl who has like basically zero confidence, hasn't really outside of like our family friend circle, don't really have any friends or any social life. And so my self-esteem, my confidence was probably slim to none. Mm-hmm. But now here's this guy that's like showing me interest and saying nice things to me and like uplifting me, right? And so maybe I was naive as 18-19 year old and I was buying into all of it. And so him and I started quote unquote dating, whatever dating looked like back then, those days. It's like, I'm gonna go to the gurdwara on Sunday, are you gonna be there? I'm gonna be sitting in the back corner and I'll wave to you.
Dating looked like pretty much.
So me and him started seeing each other, if you want to call it that. And so I am Jat. He was not.
Okay.
Even though he was Punjabi.
Yeah.
And somewhere in the grapevines, my parents ended up finding out about him.
Okay.
I don't know how or who, what, where, when, how that happened, but they did. And I'm young at this point. Me and him have been like talking, like literally talking. It's not even like we were going on actual dates. Like I wasn't able to go meet up with him anywhere or anything. I think the only time we did meet up, we hung out at like the park. Like we literally sat at the park bench and just talked in person. And I think they found out about that as well. And so when my dad found out, his immediate response was, well, I have to take you to India.
Oh, gosh.
And this was my sophomore year. You know, in January, you get like that month off from college.
Yeah.
And so I had just finished up the fall semester of my sophomore year. I had January off. And he tells me, oh, we need to go to India because your Thayaji is very sick. And
you didn't think anything of it at that time?
I didn't. Because I loved going to India.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was so much fun to, because I didn't really have any family here at the time. Mm-hmm. All my like masi, masers, everyone, mommy and everyone, all my cousins, they were all in Punjab, right? So it was always a nice treat to go home and be surrounded by family. So he's like, yeah, we're going to go to India. Your dad's really sick and I don't want to go alone. So I want you to come with me.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, I have a month off from school. You're going to take me to India. Why would I say no to that? Like, yeah, let's do it.
But he didn't. So when he found out or when your parents found out.
They didn't say anything to me.
So you didn't even know that they knew?
Nope.
Oh, because I was going to say otherwise, like if it was a big deal at home, you would have known right away.
Thinking back to it, I feel like I knew something was up. Right. Mm-hmm. Because you can always feel like a shift in energy, right? In like your home space. So I knew something was up because my parents were acting different and weird. Mm-hmm. I can't really explain or describe to you what it was, but I just remember it feeling very different at home for like a week or so. And then the one day, just randomly in the morning, like my dad walked into my room and sat me down and was like, yeah, we're going to go to India. Okay. Like, I need you to go with me. Your Thayaji is very sick. I don't know if I can handle it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So you come with me. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to India and apparently my Thayaji had already at this point advertised me in like the local newspaper.
Oh my gosh.
Like literally put out an ad, right? Yeah. And it said like, you a citizen girl seeking professional Jat sick boy.
Oh my gosh. This is unbeknownst to you.
Unbeknownst to me. No clue.
Yeah.
And the reason why I found out is because once we got there, normally when I go to India, I stay at my nanke, but this time, you know, because my Thayaji apparently was sick, we went straight to my Thayaji's house. And I think like the second day after I like got over the jet lag and stuff, I walked into the drawing room or like the living room.
Living room, yeah.
And there was my dad and my Thayaji, and they just had all of these biodatas. Or like,
oh my god,
resumes, like, if you will,
and pictures, right?
And pictures of guys on the coffee table. And I was just like, what is this?
Yeah.
And that's when my dad kind of was like, yeah, so we're thinking about getting you married. And so your Thayaji went to a marriage bureau and like put out this ad, and I was working with a marriage bureau to find you suitors. And these are all the guys that have responded back so far.
Oh my gosh. What was your reaction like at the time? What was going through your head?
Betrayal?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
at the least. Yeah.
Like, how? What did I do wrong? Like, for this to be happening?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, this is, we're talking about more than 20 years ago. So I don't, at this point, really remember. But I can't recall if at that point my dad did or didn't say that, like, oh, we found out about your supposed boyfriend and so this is why we're doing it, or if I just connected the dots. I can't recall that detail, but it was a betrayal. And I'm pretty sure emotionally, like, I cried a lot, and I remember my heart just hurting so much, like, how did I get here, and suffocation,
yeah,
right? Like, this is it. I'm only 20 years old at this time. Sorry, I'm 20. And like my life is being decided. Like this is all I've got to live. Mm-hmm. And this is all I know life. But I think after a little bit, it was almost like I was saying earlier, that sense of freedom, mm-hmm. which is so sad. And I think in our culture, that gets almost
marketed
like a highlight. Yeah,
it's as marketed
that,
right? to you as, yeah.
Right. Like well, once you get married, married, you're free to mm-hmm. do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But that's not even the truth because now you're one accountable to this other person that you don't even know most of the time. Mm-hmm. And then whatever baggage and stuff his family brings and how they want you to act and how they want you to live life. So you don't ever really get to be free.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is not even someone you chose. I can't help but think also wedding, marriage is something all girls look forward to. And here you are being told you're going to marry someone and your mom's mm-hmm. not there, your brother's not there, your friends, nobody.
Nobody. And that, I think that was one of the other thoughts that went through my head because I am a girl of like the 80s and 90s mm-hmm. Bollywood era, completely, you know, submerged in fantasy land with how things are going to play out. And so, yes, I had imagined my wedding to be like this big over the top ordeal mm-hmm. and not to like toot my own horn, but like in our community at the time, because we were one of the original Punjabi families in New York at the time. And kind of like how my dad worked his way up in the community ranking, sort of to speak. Me and my brother were kind of looked at as like almost like trophy kids. Mm-hmm. And so we used to have a lot of like aunties and our uncles in our family circle that be like, oh my God, you know, whoever gets Manpreet and Sandeep's rishta, they're going to be so lucky because these kids are so good. And mm-hmm. the, you know, the family's amazing and this and that. So in my brain, I was always like thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to like strike, you know, gold or whatever when I get married because they would make me feel like I had been that I'm being groomed to be this pedestal trophy wife at some point mm-hmm. because of whose daughter I am and that I was a good girl and I did all the things and mm-hmm. always with my parents. And so even like taking that notion and then marrying it with what my dream wedding was going to be like and all of these people that like know my parents. Right. And that was another thing. Everyone and their mother knew my mom and my dad. So I couldn't even do anything wrong, even if I tried, because my dad would get the phone call right away. Like I didn't recognize, I didn't know people, but they knew who I was.
Yeah. Sort of a similar situation with me as well. Yeah.
Right. So you know the you feeling know, like
when you have
you
parents
just can't
that are
get
very
away
prominent.
With it.
Yeah. You can't. Yeah. I mean, I'd walk into a store and like an Indian store and right away they would be like, oh, you're so-and-so's daughter, aren't you? You know?
Right, like, right. You know. Exactly.
And back then, because there were such few Punjabi, like Indians, mm-hmm. you know, that I think community was very, very tight-knit and everyone knew.
Yes, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was almost like you're living in a big city, but it's almost like you're living in like a bend, right?
Yeah.
Because everybody knows everyone. Everyone knows everyone's business.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're there in India, did you end up getting married at that point?
Yes, I did. Weirdly enough, though, I don't know like what struck my dad's like heart in the moment. But even though I was being forced into this arranged marriage at the age of 20, they did give me the option to choose the groom.
Okay.
So they like literally laid out all of the biodatas and the photos and they were like, here you go, pick from here, like the 3-4 guys that you like or that stand out to you. And then, well, it was almost like an interview process.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm going through all of the things and I come across literally all of the photos were Sardars. And at that time, I just was not like physically attracted to Sardars. And mm-hmm. so I could never see myself being married to one. And so almost all the photos were guys in turbans. And so I was just like, no. Like I wouldn't even read any of the thing. And I came across one photo where like it was a clean shaven, you know, haircut, nice haircut guy. And he had like really, really nice, like hazel, billion type akhaan and looked somewhat like cool and like, you know, maybe someone that I would actually find cute if he was like walking past me on the street.
Yeah.
And then I read his like little bio data and he was going to be a dentist. He was in dental school in like another state, not in Punjab, but like somewhere near Gujarat or Bihar, I think. Mm-hmm. And his family was from Amritsar, which was very far from, I'm from like the Moga Kotkapura side. And so yeah. Amritsar is like 4 hours away from
I'm
us.
I'm from Amritsar.
Are you okay? And you got married on our side of town.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, so my immediate family back home didn't really have any like deep connections or relationships or friendships with anyone in that area because, as you know, it's so far away from our side. Yeah. But for whatever reason, this is the guy that I was drawn to, call it Kismat, call it Karam, you know, destiny, whatever it is. He was the one that I was like, okay, I think this guy. And so at this point, my mom has now arrived in India.
Okay.
And so we're kind of like starting this interview process, if you will. And my mamaji set up a time and date for us to go to their house. We met with the family.
He wasn't there?
He was there. Okay. We got to speak for like literally 2 minutes, but I honestly don't even recall what the conversation was. I think me and him were like, I was 20 at the time. He was 23. So he was okay. Also very young, right?
Yeah.
And we just kind of both just sat in the room and we're like, all right, okay, cool. Like, this is happening. And yeah.
And you spoke to him in Punjabi?
Yeah, yeah. Because his English wasn't that good.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, Fabi English. Like, his sister apparently was the fluent English speaker. And so she was trying to like flex and talk to me in English and stuff. His older sister. But, yeah, no, we spoke. I can't recall what we said or did or whatever, but we just kind of like looked at each other, nodded. And that night we went home and apparently the families were like, yeah, okay, gal pakki ya.
Okay.
And I remember like once that happened, then obviously my brother's still here in the States.
Yeah.
He was in med school. And so I guess they had called him to tell him like, yeah, your sister's going to get married. So let's figure out a date when you can come to attend the wedding. And I remember in one of those conversations, like my brother literally was, and me and my brother did not have a very good relationship as kids. Like I shouldn't say a really good relationship, but we were your typical brother, sister, sibling rivalry, right? Like we would fight a lot and like beat each other up and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think at some point when my brother was a little bit older, like when he first started college, I think he realized like, okay, mom and dad are being a little too harsh on her. So he would try to like get them to let me hang out with him and his circle
advocate
of friends
for you.
Once in a while. So I wish he would have done it more often and you know, gone a little bit more harder. Absolutely been more assertive, but that's fine. Like I was taking what I could get. And so when I'm in India and, you know, he finds out, I remember him telling me like, tell mom and dad you don't want to get married. Like, why are you doing this? And I just remember, like, I can't remember if I said it to him, but I thought it like, this is my way out. Right? Because at this point, I'm already like, they already know. So if I go back to New York, my life is never going to be the same. It's just going to get worse. Like, I already have so many restrictions. Then I'm not going to be able to do anything. Like, what is that life going to look like? And it was just, I remember feeling even more suffocated. And so I thought to myself, well, he seems like a nice guy. He seems westernized enough, modern enough. Like, I've always dreamt of being married, right? Because again, Bollywood creates this, like, this hero's going to come in and save the day for you, right? Like your knight in shining armor. And I think in my brain, I started painting him like that and seeing him in that way, like, okay, he's the one that God's sending for me to like start living my life and be free and create this Bollywood fantasy with. And so we just went ahead with it and we got married within, I would say, like 2.5 months of me being in India.
Okay. So at that point, you knew you weren't coming back to school?
No.
Or Okay.
No.
So yeah, did they tell you like you're going to marry this guy and then you can continue your studies or?
Yes. So the conversation was you'll get married. Well, at this point, the semester you're dropping, right? So my spring semester of sophomore year, I dropped out. And then they're like, you'll go back in the summertime. You can pick up summer classes so you can make up for what you missed. So this way you're not too far behind on college. And then we still had to figure out immigration wise, like how we were going to get him over as well. Right. So that gave us time for that. And so that was kind of the plan. We got married in April. I came back to New York in, I'd say, like right before late May. So I could start summer classes. Yeah. And I think I went to my summer classes only for 1 month that my husband started acting out and started acting like crazy and, you know, telling me, oh, you're over there. You're probably hanging out with other guys and like started showing all these insecurities and saying like, oh, tusi amrikna kuriya avchingai hundangaya, right? You guys have like 3-4 guys on the side and that's what you're probably doing over there. That's why you wanted to leave me and run back.
Oh,
and kind of like all of this emotional manipulation.
Yeah. And he didn't exhibit any of this before when you were just talking to him.
I mean, no, at that time, that first like month of marriage, not really. Like we were, I guess you could say like in a honeymoon phase, right? Like,
yeah.
Even though I had at this point moved to Amritsar, but we would like never stay at my in-law's house. Like he had friends all over different shares. Like he had friends in Jalandhar. He had friends in Ludhiana because he was going to school out of state and he had met all these other kids there. And so he would just like, we would just go get in the car and go visit his friends in like all of these big cities and spend times there. Or we would go to like, I went to Himachal Pradesh like a lot with him. We would like go to the mountainside and, you know, another, and a few of the guys that he went to school were getting married around the same time that we had. And so we'd have like weddings to attend. And then those newlywed couples, we'd start hanging out together. So there was never really like an alone moment, right? Mm-hmm. If you will, mm-hmm. to really recognize who he was because we were always doing fun stuff.
Yeah.
Like now I'm living life. Now I'm going to these weddings. I've cut my hair. Oh my God, I cut my hair, Jyoti, at this point. That was literally one of the first things I did after I got married.
Yeah,
my sister-in-law, she had like a bob cut.
Yeah.
And as did my mother-in-law. And so I told my sister-in-law, I was like, I'm going to cut my hair.
Yeah.
So they took me to like some fancy salon that they thought was going to be up to my standards.
Okay.
I think it was in Jalandhar, actually.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, this guy gave me like the worst bob cut ever.
Oh
it was
my
so
gosh.
Bad. But hey, I had short hair and I could style it however I wanted. Now I wasn't walking around with this long braid.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I did that and I had to see my parents for the first time. Girl.
What was that
my
like?
My heart was racing so fast. And I remember I kept telling my husband like, oh my God, my dad's going to kill me. You have to protect me. Oh my God, my dad's going to kill me. You have to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, it's fine. You're married now. Like they can't say anything to you, which is weird that that registered in his brain too.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember my dad was so mad when he saw me.
Yeah.
He was very angry that I did that. But, he couldn't say anything now.
Exactly. He couldn't. And I mean, that's what he had been telling you all along, right? You can do whatever you want when you get married. So here it is, you know. And it's interesting to me that, and I think of this a lot, actually, it's interesting that you had a long braid, yet your sister-in-law who's living in India, your mother-in-law who's living in India, they had bob cuts, you know? And it's almost like the people living in India moved with the times, and parents who came in the 80s from India, they were holding on to India as it was in the 80s. They never progressed from there.
No.
You know, and even now I notice the difference in girls in India versus here. Like I was taught to make roti and ja and dal and sabji when I was like a teenager. And I went back to India and these girls didn't even know how to make ja.
Right. Because they all have so much different help, right?
They
to do so many different things.
And it just wasn't expected of them anymore, you know? It was more like, you know, you don't have to know how to do these things. Whereas like for us, it was like, well, you're going to get married. You're going to have to run a household. You're going to have to know how to cook and clean and do all these things.
Yeah.
it just stood out to me from your story as you were telling me that, you know.
That's a great observation. And I'm sure you can agree with this, but it's like what you said, that everyone who lives in India, I've always sensed like they're always trying to be as Western and modern as possible, mm-hmm. right? Or to appear that they're Westernized.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone who lives in the States, especially that older generation from like the 70s, 80s, 90s, really held on to the culture.
Yeah.
And held on to their roots very tight and try to observe Punjabi culture as much as possible. So yeah. We were probably at one point, I feel like we were probably more Desi and more yes. Punjabi than like the kids back home. And like, yeah. even now when I go to India sometimes as an adult, like I was in Ludhiana back in February at like this coffee shop on Valentine's Day, the number of girls that walked in all dressed up in these like beautiful, sexy dresses for Valentine's yeah. Day brunches. And they're all talking in English. Nobody talks in Punjabi. And mm-hmm. I'm sitting there in my suit.
Yeah,
at the coffee shop. And yeah. they're in like these super cute, like frilly dresses, very feminine. And I'm like, huh? Interesting.
Yeah. yeah, I know. It's tables have turned, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you said about a month after you came back, your husband started acting all like possessive and insecure. And what was that like? Like, did you even want him coming here then?
I think at this point, this just goes back again to the lack of confidence and trust that my parents never really built in me or allowed me to have. Even though he's portraying this kind of behavior to me, it was like, this is my husband, right? Yeah. And so what do I need to do to fix this? It wasn't this is a red flag, you're being toxic, like let me yeah. run as far away from you as possible. It was, no, I need to run in that direction because now here is somebody who supposedly loves me, cares for me, is my person. And, you know, you start like, I can't lose that because yeah. how am I ever going to get this again?
Yeah.
So sadly, my reaction was I dropped out of school again. Mm-hmm. Like I dropped the summer semester. And I think actually my parents even encouraged it as well, which
really?
Is.
Really?
Yeah. They didn't stop me. They were like, huh, fir tu, it's okay. Apne ne paise wapas aayenge summer semester to. Don't worry. We haven't lost that much. We'll just buy you a ticket and go back to India and spend the summer there with him, which is what I did. So that summer I went back to India. I stayed with him. And that's the summer that I saw who he truly was.
Thank you for listening to Roo. We appreciate you joining us as we cultivate a community of strong, empowered women, one story at a time. If you or someone you know has a story you'd like to share, please contact us at roodharaz@gmail.com. That's roohdharaz@gmail.com. Also, do us a favor and please share this podcast with your sisters, your mom, your friends, aunties, your eyebrow lady, like any lady you know. You know, you get the idea. Till next time, kush raho, be well.